Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads, the only Linux podcast that, you know what, I stayed up till 4 a.m. watching the election, so I'm too tired to come up with a joke here. As usual, I'm Shane.
I'm Connor.
I'm Mike and fuck the wall.
Oh God, we said we weren't going to mention the election on this episode, but we've roundly failed.
2 seconds in.
We're no more than 10 seconds into the episode. My God. So the elephant in the room, I guess, isn't it? It's not Linux news, but yeah, me and Mike both have the same thing that we wrote on the notes here, is that we're trying not to just refresh the news app on our phones every 30 seconds.
We are recording this on the Wednesday. So if you guys, when you listen to it, know the results, we don't know. So don't come back to tell us yet, because we like the surprise. Whatever, that sounded better in my head.
Yeah, don't travel back in time and tell us.
If you do, give us the sports almanac or whatever it was.
Oh yeah.
When this comes out, we might actually know who's winning. But like, yeah.
Yeah, we don't.
But anyway. Let's not dwell on it. Let's get to Linux and technology and things you can plug in. I don't know why I said that. That was weird. But
such as segues.
Yeah, terrible segues. First up, so the first bit of news is something I think has caught everyone's eye: the new Raspberry Pi 400. And I think this is cool because I like their little convention that they're going with here. So it's like the X100. Is this now going to be extra? You know, is it going to be something more than a Pi?
So maybe we could, if anybody hasn't heard about it yet, the 400 is the Raspberry Pi 4 encased in a swanky, what do you call it, keyboard case, right? So the whole thing, the whole computer is a keyboard, and you just hook it up to your TV like you do with all the personal computers of old ages, like in the 80s when you had a Commodore 64 or that kind of thing that I'm too young to think about. I actually saw something like that.
Get my off dad, our podcast, Poppy.
my dad used to teach IT after class to kids when I was about 3 years old. And my very first memory, one of my first memories, is my dad teaching a class of computers on IQ151, which was like the socialist equivalent of the Commodore 64, and it did look like the Raspberry Pi 400 looks much better than that, obviously, but it's the same concept, and it's Raspberry Pi 4 based. And yeah, it's possible that you are right, Shane, that when the Raspberry 5 comes out, it's going to be the 500 is going to be this kind of a form factor, because you know they follow the naming conventions.
Yeah, I did actually find it very interesting. When I saw Raspberry Pi 400, it wasn't actually what I thought it was going to be. When I saw that, I thought it was going to be like a desktop, like actual desktop grade Raspberry Pi. That's what I was expecting. And I guess it sort of is, but there is a Raspberry Pi 4 inside of it. I don't know if, I didn't actually read too much into it, so I don't know if it's higher spec, but I don't think it is.
I think it's the only thing that's slightly better is the chipset in it. A newer model of the very same thing. But I think the amount of RAM is going to be the same. Sorry. So the amount of RAM is going to be the same, and depends on your needs. For me, I can't use a Raspberry Pi for a desktop. No way. But maybe there are some people who can. But it also has got the GPIO pins coming out, so you can, you know, do lots of fun things. You can use it for gaming, you know, the old, not old school, legacy, you know, whatever you call the gaming when you play silly games from old times.
Retro?
Retro, yeah, retro gaming.
Emulators and things like that. Yeah. Interesting thing that you said that you couldn't use it as your desktop computer. Obviously us, we're power users, we like to multitask and do everything, but I think it's surprisingly useful. I mean, I saw recently a video of I think it's Quidzup on his YouTube channel, himself and his,
gonna mention that, yeah, I saw that.
Himself and his wife, girlfriend, I'll just say partner, himself and his partner have been trying out different Linux distributions. But this one was built specifically for the Pi in mind, and it's just Ubuntu, like the latest 2010. And they're saying that it actually seems to be pretty good. I mean, they said they were able to do 720p YouTube, they could do 1080p YouTube, whereas other distros, like they tried Manjaro and Manjaro was struggling and things like that, and they said that and only 1080p YouTube only dropped about 15 frames, and they said they barely even noticed, but they just had the Stats for Nerds up and they could see that was happening. But they said if it was just streaming, for example, XBMC from their local network, they said it dropped like maybe less than 5 frames to stream video. So they said it was rock solid. And then you have your normal Ubuntu GNOME desktop for navigating around, and they said the performance was barely, like, there was no noticeable delay or anything like that in with navigating the UI. So that's good. That's it seems to be optimized that well that you're able to run it on the Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi has always had a great reputation, for me anyway, for video and for video transcoding and encoding and whatnot, because of the details escape me, several years ago I had a little Plex server on a Raspberry Pi 2 or 3, I'm gonna say 3, I can't actually remember, but I had a really nice little Plex server set up in a drawer underneath the router. It was connected via Ethernet to the router. I had a USB hard drive with all the movies and TV shows, and I had a web interface set up on it. It was brilliant. And you could just stream your media directly from that without any problems whatsoever. I would believe that I would have an easy time believing that the Raspberry Pi can be used as a fairly capable desktop system. I don't think anyone doubts that, to be honest.
Well, depends on the course.
It depends on the use case, obviously. But like, if you're just looking to do basic computer things, it's pretty much fine.
I mean, there was LibreElec for a while, and I think that could run flawlessly on the Pi 2 or in the Pi 3, and like could stream everything. But that was literally just turning the Pi into an appliance, as in this is your Kodi box, and that's its only function, which is fine if you just stick it under the TV.
But it's not a desktop use case.
Yeah. What is compelling about this, for me at least, is especially that demo was only up until that point when it was actually thought, oh, like you could stick this down in front of your 6, 7, 8-year-old kid and they can play their games and everything, and it's using hardly any power. It's just a Raspberry Pi, hook it up to a monitor, away you go. Especially now that it's now integrated into a keyboard, and it'll take up even less space, because rather than having a keyboard and the Pi in its own case, then you just have the Pi inside the keyboard. So stick this down in front of your 6, 7-year-old or whatever, and away they go. They can watch YouTube, they can do whatever they want, they can play their games, they can play their Tux cart or whatever it is, or Mind Test. I don't even know if there's Mind Test builds for ARM, but I'm sure there are.
It has been, comes with mine, Minecraft.
Oh, Minecraft.
Yeah, there is an ARM edition, yeah. We should do that. We had that set up, actually.
Oh, yeah, we did, actually, yeah.
Dublin Maker Faire.
When we were Dublin Maker, many moons ago, it seems.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know what we're on about, with the Dublin Linux community, we had a stall at the Dublin Maker event, and it was all about Linux and showing Linux to people, and we had a Raspberry Pi with the Minecraft ARM edition on it. And that's pretty much all the kids wanted to know about.
I remember parents coming up and they're like, oh, what's the big deal? Like, I know what Minecraft is. Like, I see my kid playing Minecraft all the time. And so I made a conscious effort to say, no, what's interesting is not that they're playing Minecraft, but they're playing Minecraft on this. And they held up the credit card sized, like, and they're like, oh, all right. So they weren't getting I was like, the demonstration is not that your kid can play Minecraft. The demonstration is that Minecraft is being run on this, and I held it up, and then they got it.
Could also be just that you can play Minecraft, because, you know, the perception some people have of Linux is crazy. Like, some people genuinely think there's no UI and you have to do everything on the command line.
Yeah,
and
compile
it yourself. And
the amount of people who think that. Yeah,
I had to actually correct one of my colleagues at school at the uni recently, who said, "Oh, Windows is much, much, much more user friendly. You don't have to do the command line." And I was saying, "Yeah, no, there are many people who use Linux and don't touch the command line at all, for whatever reason. It's just." It's not taught that way. Still, it's Linux is usually taught as the command line first, which I'm fine with. Works for me, but many people don't like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. I'm honestly guilty of this myself. I rarely use the command line because I only ever used it because I had to. If there was a GUI alternative, I would use that.
I'm the same.
But there's no guilt with it, is there? So if you, that's the another time, and that time I actually cringed, but I didn't say anything, is that I heard somebody saying, so how do I log into this thing so I can run Linux? And somebody else, we can actually download Linux and run it yourself. Which one? Well, how do I do that? Well, just go for Mint. And I'm like, okay, well, that's bad, because a person who knows nothing about the other person as a human or as a user just immediately recommended one distribution, which is to me the bad approach
they have to do something. They couldn't
ask first what's your experience with computers, what are you used to, what do you want to learn, if anything, or what do you want to do, and then make a recommendation. If you just say Mint, or if you just say Ubuntu, or if you just say Arch,
it's a gamble, but you're probably going to get less or more hits recommending something like Zorin OS or Ubuntu or Mint or Elementary OS, something like that. You're probably going to get more hits and more success than if you say, oh, you're new to Linux, try Arch.
Yeah, no, Arch probably is not the best, although for some people it would be, right? But
discounting that for some people it would be, but for someone who's so that way inclined, when they get used to Ubuntu, they'll probably get used to Ubuntu in a week, and they'll say, okay, I get the whole base concept of this Linux thing. I can download an ISO, I can burn it, I can install it on my desktop. Ubuntu, I'm getting tired of Ubuntu. Is there something else out there? That kind of person is going to find Arch anyway, or they're going to find Gentoo or whatever they want, Linux from scratch, whatever they want anyway. But I think by recommending Ubuntu or Zorin OS or Elementary OS or whatever is your poison, something like that, then you're going to get the people who say, you're going to catch the people who say, all I want to do is turn on my laptop and browse YouTube.
Yeah, but you need to find out which one of those that you just named, right? Because if you say just Mint,
it's a gamble. I'm not disagreeing with you that it's not a gamble, but it's all about probabilities in my point of view.
You recommend Mint, and then the person is going to be like, okay, where's Chrome? And then you say, well, from now on, and this is a lovely segue, Mint is actually recommending Chrome. Mint is actually, they are actually rebuilding Chromium on their own servers. That was meant to be a nice segue to a point on the news somewhere in there, since I mentioned Mint anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Yeah, they've recoiled in horror at Canonical's approach to bundling snaps. In other words, if you want to install Chromium on Ubuntu, it's going to be a snap. Even if you do not use the snap install command, you just do apt install, it's still going to be the snap. And their logic behind it is it's freeing up developer time. Rather than targeting a specific build of Chromium for 20 or 4, for, or not 20, 24 is an LTS. Sorry, I misspoke. I was in my mind is thinking 1204. So there's 1204, 1404. 1604, 1804, 2004, rather than having specific builds of Chromium for each one of those, then they just have one target and that's a snap, and then snap will work on all of them and that frees up development time. So that's their reasoning behind it. Some people do not like that, including Mint, which is downstream, and they say that this is snaps by the back door, or we don't have control over this, we're just accepting it downstream. Canonical could bundle anything inside the snap. Ooh, scary times. I'm not saying their argument doesn't have some validity, but it's not very likely that Canonical or this evil corporation who are going to bundle something malicious into the snap. But I suppose that's the technical way, and that's the open source way of, if we can't independently vet it, then it's no use to us. And I'm not saying that I think the snaps are open source, it's just the store isn't. So it's, as long as you go around the store, then it's fine. But you could independently vet it. But then Mint are like, no, we want to do our own thing, and snaps are evil. So,
well, and now they put their money where their mouth is, and basically dedicated a lot of compute resources in the form of some kind of a new Ryzen build to just, not just probably, it does other things, but to basically build Chromium for them. They said that they shrank the 6-hour build time down to just over an hour. And
yeah, I was reading about that as well.
That, okay, yeah. It's good that they did it, because, you know, this kind of gives validity to their statements. They are still taking everything else from Canonical, like the whole system is built on Ubuntu, so sure, right.
Seems arbitrary, all right. Yeah,
yeah, but like we've had last time, we had Matthew Miller on from Fedora. They weren't when I said that I'm installed SnapD, one of the first things I install on Fedora is SnapD. They were like, yeah, well, we don't, you know, necessarily, you know, too keen on the fact that it's basically Canonical only controlled store.
Which I can understand perfectly. I can appreciate
that. I can understand that. And they also don't build that entire system on Canonical's resources, right? They have to, you know, they do their own. They have Red Hat as the base for their operating system. And as well, they don't prevent you, right? That's the one thing that basically rules Mint out for me, is they make choices for you. And it's not the only distro that does that. Like, some people don't like Elementary for the aesthetic choices or just the workflow choices. Some people wouldn't like anything that runs GNOME or anything that runs KDE. I don't like being being kind of forcefully told this is wrong or this is good, you know, philosophically. If somebody makes a technical decision, that's one thing. If somebody forces a philosophical decision onto me, if I don't agree with the philosophical decision, then I don't like it. If I agree with it, then of course I like it, right? So depends. If it's Trump doing it, it's bad. If it's Biden doing it, I can live with that.
Careful there.
Down with this sort of thing.
Supposed to be a partisan podcast, or a non-partisan podcast, I should say. But I guess that horse has bolted a long time ago.
You should get a non-partisan mic, you know. I'm not pro Biden, but I'm definitely, well, look, I'm only in as much as I'm very, very anti-Trump. So
I'm ambivalent towards Biden. I'm neutral towards Biden.
Yeah.
I would actually say I don't like his politics, and I just think he's not Trump, so that's why I want him to win. But anyway, Jesus, no. Shit, we nearly succumbed. I was gonna just go back to the whole argument on, or not argument, the discussion about snaps. I really need to educate myself on this whole situation, because I've noticed in Papa West that they seem to heavily favor Flatpak and there are no snaps, in at least in the pop shop in the store. And I noticed the other day that Spotify, the binary, was no longer offered, like the one in the repos, and it was only available as a Flatpak. And they said, you should switch to the Spotify Flatpak if you want updates to Spotify from now on. So yeah, I'm just wondering, I don't know, is it like a HD DVD versus Blu-ray kind of scenario?
No, I think to me it's like anything else in Linux. You know, we are choice, we are about choice. No matter how much people moan about fragmentation, this is our strength. So where Apple gives you one option, Microsoft gives you one option, we give you 2,000 or 3,000 options, right? And that's it. That's our game. And people should just accept it. There's two. And there's never going to be just one. Even with the stupid things like that you never see, you know, even with the window, well, never see windowing server, right? But even you used to have.
I vote third party and I'm going app image.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You can do that. You cannot have the same level of freedom.
I'm joking.
On a Mac,
I don't have a lot of app images, but I was just trying.
Is there nothing to be said for another app image? but yeah, I remember app images were all over the place. Like Kden Live was a big one for me. If you had Kden Live on a non KDE system, you could get it as an app image, and that was usually the most straightforward way to use it. But yeah, because all the dependencies and stuff can be pretty hefty.
But it works, right? And in some cases, that's the best way. Some people distribute their stuff as an app image, some distribute it as a snap, some distribute it as a Flatpak. And
it's now a Flatpak in Pop OS, at least, I believe.
Yeah. And I understand why people go I understand why Canonical does snaps, because, you know, Connors said that. I understand why people go with Flatpak. You do it once and it works across distros, you know, from your Ubuntu-based Elementary or Pop!OS to Fedora. They all favor Flatpaks to the point where the GNOME Software Center on Fedora basically lists the sources, and you can choose. In some applications, you have three sources, you know, one for RPM, then Fedora Flatpak, and the FlatHub Flatpak. So it seems to work well, and it's getting better. I've suddenly realized that in some applications, at least, like the ones that were, for example, the planner that was made for Elementary, and I use it for Uni, that's much better as a Flatpak than it is as RPM, because there are some styling issues that basically it's because it's made for Elementary, it looks like Elementary and it doesn't go well with the GNOME theme. But if you install it as a Flatpak, it pulls everything that it needs, so at least the icons are not missing. So it works. You just need to be able to make an informed choice. And that's what at least like Linux is all about, that, right? You're going to have to, at least for some things, you need to look it up. Get yourself a little bit into the community, and then you can understand what's going on and make choices. And choices we have, unlike the other people, where they just give you a choice of one.
Agreed. Let's move on to something else. This is a very interesting story, and a lot of opinions on this one, actually. RIAA's YouTube DL takedown ticks off developers and GitHub CEO. That's from torrentfreak.com. So the RIAA, I believe, is the Recording Industry Something Association.
Yeah, of America.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, obviously YouTube DL, for obvious reasons, that's unpopular. it's a command line tool that allows you to download videos from YouTube, for those who don't know.
And other video websites, it's not just YouTube.
And yeah, that's the thing. It's poorly named, and they put some examples in their code that basically said, this is how you download the latest video by Justin Timberlake, and that made them an easy target. Yeah. But you can use it for so many other things. Like, you don't have to touch YouTube, and you don't have to. You can download, like, people use it for many cases, right?
I used it to download a Slipknot video because I wanted to make an electro remix of it. The weirdest use for it ever.
So many things to unpack there.
This is not from personal experience or anything, but I hear from the grapevine that it works on Pornhub.
Well, there you go. You know, well, like there's
what hub?
There's two issues, I think. One is that, at least for me personally, I advocate for piracy. I think cultural starvation is almost as bad as physical one, and people who can't afford art should be given access for free, and the system doesn't allow it, so I would not blame anybody for stealing a movie.
I always knew you were on the radical left, Mike.
Yes, I am. And you see, if you saw me, I'm doing the, what's his name? Bernie Sanders, you know, pointing over the top and downwards. I can't do that. I can't do that voice. But anyway, that's one thing. So second thing, like, I don't live in the United States. What is the Recording Association of Idiots in America or whatever it is? What right do they have to disable me from downloading something? Right.
It was a legal suit or a lawsuit or whatever you call it.
Digital Millennium Copyright Act that also doesn't apply within the European Union, as far as I'm concerned, right? The American Association did a DMCA takedown on GitHub, which is a global site. Of course, they have to abide by American laws, but that's the problem, right? I'm not in the United States. I don't want to. And something that I might have been using for whatever purposes, most of them imaginable, are actually legal. Now I can't do that because America, right? That's not good.
Yeah, well, the EU does have something similar. That was around, we talked about this a long time ago on the show. I had a very in-depth discussion about this. We'll find the episode and put it in the show notes.
Oh, will we?
If you want to listen back to it. But back when we sounded like crap.
By we, he means Mike.
Yeah.
But the Article 13, wasn't it? Like, it was part of GDPR and whatnot. And that was essentially similar. That was lobbying by the recording industry in Europe brought that about.
Then take it through the European courts. Because this is, you know, that should be the issue. That should be the way. We have our own institutions, so bring it here, and let's have a discussion. Let's submit to the judiciary. You know, let's give it to the judiciary, to the European judiciary, to deal with it. And if there is
so tough though, like the enforcement is the problem. Like, it's so difficult to enforce these things when you're on the internet, which is globally accessible. Like, it's so difficult to enforce.
But you are innocent until proven guilty. So until somebody proves you guilty at a court of law, they should not. And this is obviously I'm not a lawyer, right? But at least, and this is simplifying matters extremely, but if you didn't do anything, nobody can punish you. So why should, and I know this is a commercial law and it's companies covering their arse with this, because if it went to court, it's going to cost so much money and they probably are going to lose. So they are just doing it just like that. And I don't blame GitHub, which is owned by Microsoft, for doing that. Like, if I was running things there, I probably do it as well, because, you know, if not doing it will bring you another bucket of pain. But it's like, it almost wants me to scream that's not fair, right? They should not be able to affect us outside of the United States. It's got nothing to do with this. There is another whole rest of the world.
It reminds me of something tangentially related, and it involves Microsoft as well. Remember, possibly it was like 5-10 years ago. I don't think it was 10 years ago. Possibly it was 5 years ago. It was Microsoft Ireland were brought up by the US authorities. And they said, you're Microsoft, you're an American company. All that data that you're storing over in Ireland, we want access to it. And all the three-letter agencies were like rubbing their hands and saying, oh, we're going to get access to all of this data. And Microsoft Ireland stood up to them and said, no, this is in a sovereign nation. You can't just... We're in a sovereign nation and we're in the EU. It's a different jurisdiction. You can't just lay claims on it just because our parent company, i.e. Microsoft of America, are American. I can't remember which way that went, but like, fair play to Microsoft Ireland saying, listen, their servers are in Ireland, you can't touch them.
Well, now they are creating submersible data centers, so maybe they just put them into international waters and starling the data out, and no one can touch them.
Welcome to the future, people.
Put them on Sealand.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sealand. Oh, I love that place.
But that's still in the UK waters, isn't it? So that's the that seems to be the problem, or is it?
I think that's what it was. Was he was claiming that it was just outside of the UK territorial waters, so he could claim it as his own independent thing.
Yeah, it's very for those who don't know, Sealand is like this old platform.
Yeah, it's like a stump
out in the middle of the sea in the channel.
Yeah, it was like a stump of an oil rig, like
I think it was a naval platform used in the war. And for what I don't know what for, but but they basically made a country on it. And it was invaded by pirates and everything, like it was wild. Fascinating.
I think he made his own passports and he made his own. Did he make his own
football
currency?
Team as well?
Yeah.
Well, there was even 11 of them. I always go for like five guys on an oil rig or something. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
And if you see it, the thing is tiny.
Yeah, but it was literally invaded at one point. Like the story is crazy. Like it was invaded by mercenaries. I swear to God. Like, and they held them hostage and stuff for a few days and everything. Like crazy shit. It's so funny though. But anyway, let's get back to Linux. So just before we move on to other things, we would be remiss if we did not mention 2010, Ubuntu 2010, and 2104 is going to be called Hirsute Hippo as well.
Hirsute apparently means full of hair, so not me.
That's right. So I am hirsute, for instance. I don't know if you guys have ever seen me, but like not you two guys, you guys have seen me, but the people listening. But I'm very hirsute.
But Shane, you've got two new YouTube videos where people can watch it.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna. I tried not to hawk the YouTube channel here too much because it's I don't know, just seems disingenuous or something. But anyway, Ubuntu.
Apparently, Robin Williams was one of those people who were just covered in hair.
But yeah, talk about Ubuntu.
Okay.
Yeah, so Ubuntu, which one? The 2010 that is just out?
It's Austin Powers jokes. It's Groovy Baby.
Ah, yeah, you see, I don't think I've seen it. Actually, I have. Yeah, it's not great movies.
They're fantastic movies.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I don't really care either way. Groovy Gorilla, for those like me who didn't get that subtle joke, Ubuntu 2010, which is just out, is called Groovy Gorilla. Ubuntu 2010, which is just out, is called Groovy Gorilla, which was, the name was... well, it was Martin Wimpress who came up with it. There is a great artwork, both the official one and like by now traditional Sylvia Ritter's image of the Groovy Gorilla is really trippy in a trippy kind of way, and I really like it. It's going to be linked in the show notes. The features of it, if you haven't already heard, GNOME 3.38, kernel 5.8, I haven't even tried it yet. So anyone here tried Groovy Gorilla?
No, but Pop OS did an upgrade recently to 2010 because I think they just matched the version numbers.
Yeah, they do.
But haven't noticed any difference, to be honest.
Yeah, it's an
Intel. I don't notice much difference.
I think in Pop 2010 is improvements on their tiling and the way that they it kind of half does tiling and half intelligently kind of. I think they're now you can stack windows and tabs in the segments,
yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
I don't personally use the window hotkeys that much anymore, because the reason for that is that I have dual monitors and they're two different resolutions, two different sizes. So I'm not sure if that's the issue, but basically the workspaces didn't really work on the second monitor. Like, so I would switch my workspace and I would, you know, manipulate my windows with the hotkeys and stuff, but like it would only work on the primary monitor. It wouldn't, like, I can move windows between screens, but when it comes to moving workspaces, it's almost like the second monitor isn't part of the workspace thing. Like, it just does it on the primary monitor and that's it. And maybe that's fixed since, I haven't tried it, to be honest, but that was why I kind of stopped using that functionality. So next up, the UK is to ban the sale of carrier locked phones from December 2021, which is, to me, fantastic news and something that everyone should do, to be honest. I can't actually remember if they don't do this in Ireland. No,
I don't think so. I bought a few phones from a carrier and I don't think any of them were locked.
Oh, you mean, or do they lock them? Oh yeah, they very much do.
They do.
Yes.
So,
especially if you're billing, that shit is locked. If no, it's effectively assume that if you, up until recently, personal experience may vary, but I just assumed that if you bought something from Vodafone or Three or Air, that it'll be locked to that network. And there's those used phone shops that are everywhere in Dublin. You go down to them, pay them like 15 or 20 quid, and they'll unlock any phone for you. So
I had an experience with O2 in England in like 2012, where all I needed to do to get the phone away from their network was to give them a call or something, and they said, okay, within 2 days you'd be able to stick a card in there. So yeah, I think I kind of always expected that this is basically just a norm, because why would you lock it? Like, I know why, but
yeah, they money. they lock it because one, they people's inertia. If they create a barrier to going, I want to go from Vodafone to Three, for example, or from Three to Air or something like that. I want to go over there. Oh wait, my phone doesn't work on it. They're kind of hoping that people's just inertia will just stop them. And also, on a bill phone, they subsidize the initial cost. So rather than paying for a 500 euro phone, with their billing plan, you can say, oh, rather than getting a 500 euro phone, I get it for 100 euro plus my 50 or 60 a month, whatever. You are paying for the phone, but you're just paying for the phone in installments. So like, it's a 2-year contract. You're paying whatever the monthly plan is, plus you're paying back a tenner a month in order to pay off their subsidy. Yeah.
They're just saying you have to stay with this network until you've paid for the phone, basically. But it's not quite that straightforward, and I don't think it's a good practice. I don't like it. That's why I always buy my phone, my OnePlus 6T. I bought that straight up, and
with no
lock on it, and that's what I've been doing for the last few years. I despise those contracts that lock you in for 2 years, and I think they're unethical, and I don't think they should do it. And yeah, they can get screwed.
Mine is just on a 30-day rolling contract. Effectively, I'm with the GoMo $9.99 deal, so. If I leave, I just lose the deal.
Yeah, I like to be as portable as possible with everything. Like, I still have a prepaid plan, like, because I just don't want to sign up to a contract.
Well, there's no reason. The prepaid plans are good now, like the GoMo ones and the, what is the other one, the 47 one or something?
I think technically GoMo is a bill plan, but they you can leave whenever you want. You just lose access to the deal because you're grandfathered into it. I think the 48.ie one is approaching from the other way around. It's technically pay as you go, but you have to top up by every month. But they can say you can have it auto top up. Gives your put in your credit card details and set it up to auto top up. So they're approaching it through two different approaches. One is technically a bill plan, the other is technically a pay-as-you-go plan. But once you set the pay-as-you-go plan to auto-top up, I mean, what's the difference between that and the bill plan?
True.
Jumping over to another bit of news that we have seen recently. So HBO Max quietly restored service to Linux users. This is not super relevant to us, but it will be relevant to our American listeners because we don't get HBO Max. But But yeah, that is encouraging. I noticed in the article they said they reached out to HBO Max for a comment, and they were kind of just brushed off. They kind of said, you might be able to do it, but it's not officially supported.
This is from Ars Technica, and I love the fact that the person who wrote the article seems to be technically minded, and so much so that he's actually making jokes around it. And he goes, sometimes it seems like wide vine is the DNS of digital rights management. It can't be a wide vine. It was wide vine. It's always wide vine.
Yeah, well, as long as it's not Silverlight.
Or what was the Linux or open source attempted Moonlight.
Moonlight, yeah. The heady times of IE6 were basically, oh my god. I've tried Trinity Desktop just for kicks, spin up Ubuntu in the virtual machine, Ubuntu server, and install Trinity Desktop. It comes with Conqueror, which used to be a decent Swiss Army knife of browsing both files and internet, right? And I tried to go, if you don't count Google, nothing else works in it anymore. Like the web has changed in last 10 years so much. Like that you get this browser, it's shipped with it, but I don't think it's like officially supported by the KDE folks anymore. And you can't use these things. You have to have a modern browser, otherwise you're pretty much stuck with like a few websites that might work. And but yeah, I think it's good. It's gotten more open, the web, at least the internet. Obviously, not talking about the up things, but we don't have any Flash anymore. There's less Silverlight kind of things. And that's good.
I know WebKit is maintained by Apple, and I think Safari is a decent enough browser. But from what I hear, anything that's based off WebKit, so I don't know if Apple develop the engine and then do loads of special sauce on top of it in order to make Safari work. But I've heard like things like Midori and things that are based off WebKit rather than based off Chromium and the Blink engine. Sincerely lacking, to put it bluntly. the people say that Midori is actually quite bad. It's all right, but a lot of websites seem to fail in it. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the default browser. At least it was before on
Elementary
Raspbian.
Oh, is it
for the yeah. Raspberry Pi?
And I think it is on Elementary as well.
No, Midori. I think that's Epiphany, isn't it?
Epiphany, or is it? Okay. Oh, is Epiphany, I think, is based off WebKit as well, isn't it?
I don't, you know what? I can find out. There's GNOME Web, so that's Epiphany. Maybe Midori is on, I don't know. We can look it up. We should probably know these things. Elementary OS, default. You know,
no,
this
we
is,
shouldn't.
This is like a proper radio.
Are we
you know,
a Linux podcast?
Default browser, right? Well, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple just took whatever, what was it called before, KHTML or whatever, and well, then later WebKit, obviously, and took what's open source, massively customized it, never shared anything else. You know, that's the way. Never shared anything what they did with anybody else, and just released Safari, which is it? It is a decent browser, like in as much as any other, you know, and never shared it with anybody. And then you know, the rest of the WebKit community are stuck with not much. There are other uses, like if you use the Foliate ebook reader, that uses WebKit, because I think to open EPUB files and to render them, I think that's WebKit, because it keeps crashing. Whenever I open Foliate, I get the notification that GNOME WebKit something crashed, right? So, but
EPUB files just basically use like a subset of, or not a subset, but they basically use just like a version of HTML and CSS, really. I think that's all they are.
Yeah, I think so. XML maybe.
Yeah, or XHTML, as they say.
And sorry, just a throwback there. Yeah, Elementary OS uses Epiphany by default. And Epiphany is based on WebKit GTK, which, okay, so we could ask somebody, I don't know how good that is. I haven't actually, you know, when I'm the first thing that you install on any system, at least I do, is Firefox if it's not already, not already there.
Epiphany is very funny.
Isn't it Epiphany?
Yeah, it's Epiphany.
It's called GNOME Web, basically, in other places.
That's one way of getting out of the argument.
I can't say of your English like English language fricatives. Like I say the instead of the and per instead of or for instead of whatever, you know, philosophy, you know,
fricatives. I like your little I love the language of linguistics. I always find it so interesting. So I'm very impressed that you know what a fricative is.
I'm educated in it.
You what, mate?
I'm educated, Governor. I can English.
Yeah, you're from. Well, you spent a long time in London, innit?
Yeah, and I should stop doing that because then somebody will school me on how it actually is meant to sound. So just forget I said anything because
it's okay. It's okay. You moved to Dublin, so you're forgiven.
So if you go to Linux Lets, which is like a little, you know, plug-in-to-plug, if you take your Epiphany browser and minimize your over-the-top Audacity window and go to linuxlets.com, then what will you see? You will see something went wrong without displaying this page. Please reload or visit a different page to continue. And that's not good.
That's crazy because there's not even anything really that dynamic on our website.
Well, hold
on.
Let me just first check that it's actually not our website to fail. No, our website works in Firefox. So that maybe is just because I installed Epiphany as a or GNOME Web as a flat pack. I don't know, but it just doesn't want to load.
Because I like to try things out, I also have Opera installed, and I just tried our website in Opera, and it seems to be fine.
No, it should. Like Opera is a.
It's based on Chromium, yeah.
Yeah, that's Blink to the card. Oh, mm-hmm. By the way, did you hear? There's gonna be like since we are having this freeform discussion about browsers. Did you hear? There's gonna be there is a released Edge on Linux. I haven't like Microsoft Edge Chromium.
Oh yeah, the Chromium dev version. Yeah, I've not tried that.
As much as I said, I
just admitted that I have Opera installed. I'm not going to install Edge.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I don't know why I say devil's advocate, but Microsoft Edge isn't that bad.
Yeah,
I mean
it's
obviously
not bad.
It's just contributing to the dominance of the Blink engine, and that's not good. But as a browser, just if I objectively, it's good.
So I listened to the episode of Code Radio where Chris and Mike discussed it, and they mentioned that for the developer, if you use VS Code, Visual Studio Code,
I quite like VS Code myself, actually.
And if you are doing any web development, like the integration between VS Code, which also obviously is a Microsoft product, and Edge browser. Is really good. Like, you know, like I don't get because I'm not a web dev, so I don't get all the details they were talking about. But third is very, very specific, but also like extremely, like if you take a group of Linux users, a lot of them are going to be web devs, right? So for this kind of group of people, apparently it's very good. Plus then you get all the testing and of course more choice, more better, right? So yeah, I don't think this needs a devil's advocate. I think it's good. You know, there's nothing bad about it. You know, it's okay. It does telemetry, but you don't have to use it. What's less good is that Firefox or Mozilla seem to be kind of not going anywhere nice. So
poor old Firefox.
Yeah, it's working fine. I still use it.
I mean, I'm using this for this Jitsi meet that we're having at the moment, so it seems to be fine. Yeah, nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll always use Firefox. That's my default, but it's really taken a hammering in the market share.
And they laid off, unfortunately, they'd laid off about half the development team.
Yeah, they are focusing on some other cool projects, and I do understand, a lot of people have a lot of criticism for Mozilla, but I do understand why they're doing what they're doing. Maybe they're not implementing it in the right way. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but like They are trying to create a bit of an ecosystem, and
I think they can they could definitely have better money management. I mean, for a non-profit that's getting about 500 or 600 million a year from Google, and that's pretty much their own source of revenue, to having a CEO who's getting like about 4 or 5 million a year, or whatever his title is, could be chairperson or whatever.
Certainly seems like a lot of money. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, she's okay. She's got history with Mozilla. But maybe not just because, maybe just this time for a refresher on the top side, you know, maybe she, was her name Mitchell Baker? Maybe she could make space for somebody who knows where to take Firefox. Just an update, I reinstalled GNOME Web from the Fedora repos using the RPM package, and linuxlets.com works fine in it. So maybe it was just the Flatpak not adjusting.
You're hearing it here live, for folks.
Yeah, we are. We are testing in production.
Yeah, so visit linuxlets.com in Midori.
Yeah, and visit our store, basically. You can see all the... Yeah, teespring.com works great on and shows our merch very well in Midori.
That is a great place to maybe start wrapping up the episode, I guess, because you've already used my lines.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of stepped onto your prerogative there. Sorry.
So yeah, that's a subtle signal that it's coming close to the end of the episode. So yeah, as usual, you can get us on Telegram. You can go to linuxlabs.com/telegram. You can get to our Telegram group. I would encourage people to join, because we're hovering around the 90-ish members mark. So it'd be nice to get some new blood in there and have an old chat. If you guys would prefer other chat platforms, we're happy to accommodate in some way. You know, we wouldn't be open source geeks if we didn't give our own listeners some choice. So if there's something you would like to see us on, like Discord or whatever, like, let us know and we could set it up if there's enough demand. Like, that's no problem. As for the socials, you can find them all on linuxlads.com. Just go there. I'm really not arsed. You can go to our Steam community, which is surprisingly active. And we do have a little gaming group as well. So that'd be great. We don't always play games, but it would be really cool to see people join that. You can get us on Twitter @LinuxLads. So yeah, interact with us there. If you want to give us some money, go to linuxlabs.com/donate. Go to /store if you would like to buy a t-shirt and a mug. We did receive some, like, personally I ordered some samples and the white mug was not fantastic.
Yeah,
so I believe Connor took that one down.
I didn't get around to it, so we'll edit that out.
So yeah, just word to the wise, if you order the white mug, we're very sorry, but the quality of the design on the white mug is not very good, so we would discourage you from buying that. That's not throwing shade at our supplier, it's just the truth. So yeah, we would encourage you to buy the black background mug to put your tea or coffee in, with our lovely logo on the side. Yeah, you can also get us on Mastodon, linuxlads.com/Mastodon. Yeah. Any closing thoughts, gentlemen?
What's that famous 70s band that Connor probably really likes? Pink Floyd, you know. when they start chanting, Floyd. Tear down the
I
wall.
Like Pink Floyd too.
Tear down the wall, tear down the wall. Yeah, that kind of
thing. You mean tear down the wall?
Yeah, it's that thing. Tear down the wall.
Another brick in the wall, you mean?
No, I think at the end of the song they start chanting, they do. Tear down the wall.
The wall, tear down the wall.
Oh, okay, something. All right, yeah, okay. But yeah, so when you're listening,
no education.
So yeah, that's it for us for this week. Hope you enjoyed the madness. So signing off, I'm Shane.
I'm Pink. I mean, I'm Connor.
I'm Mike, I think. Yeah, I'm Mike.
We've verified that he is Mike. See you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.